I'm Jason Harmon, and this is API Intersection, where you'll get insights from experienced API practitioners to learn best practices on things like API design, governance, identity, auth, versioning, and more. Welcome back to API Intersection Podcast. Again, as usual lately, my co-host, Anna Doherty. Hi, Anna.
Hey, Jason. How's it going?
Good. And we've got a little bit different spin today. And I know that I say that a lot lately, but I feel like we've got really interesting, different kinds of guests coming on. So our guest today comes kind of from, the consulting world around APIs, folks that are specialists in how to kind of take on these big API and platform transformations, and part of a group of other kind of API consultants who do these sorts of things. And there's a group of people involved here behind our guests today that I know very well. And I can tell you the list of companies we're talking about that are you know, being served in these consultancies are big, well-known brands, you know, Fortune 500s, probably 100s. So I'm really looking forward to getting into kind of the patterns and trends and what it takes to get through these transformations. So with that, our guest today is Claire Barrett, who comes to us from their group, APIs First. So, you know, Claire, tell us a little bit about yourself and about APIs First.
Thank you, Jason. Really lovely to be here today. So my name is Claire Barrett. I'm a director at APIs First, and I make strategy happen. I'm a founding member of the API Collective, and we're about helping the humans behind APIs. And I'm also a leader of the Global Women in APIs initiative.
I'll say not for the podcast sake, but, you know, for Stoplight, I always try to keep that line clean. You know, we've done a lot of work with Claire and team at Women in APIs over the last year or two, and really some very cool stories, and really neat to see all that come to life.
No, you've been a fantastic partner, and we're really enjoying continuing to work with you. So my role on a day-to-day basis is I support large, mature organizations accelerate their API maturity in line with their business and technology strategies.
I think we tend to attract guests that are kind of the API geeks who are into the tech stuff. And what I'm excited about today's conversation is that, you know, we say constantly on the podcast here, and guests say constantly that, you know, you want to go tackle kind of, you know, this API first thing or develop your API or platform strategy, you're taking on a massive cultural change. The technology is actually not really that hard these days. There's a lot of really great options, but it's getting everyone kind of moving in the same direction that's hard. So Claire, I think, you know, I'm particularly here both in terms of, you know, APIs First and what you guys do for companies, but also in what you kind of learn in this API Collective from other consultants at large. Like, you know, what are folks getting themselves into when they kind of head down this road? And where do you think, you know, some of the biggest pitfalls are?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right that we see again and again that even though people are, you know, sometimes coming with what sounds like a bit more of a technical problem, increasingly the questions and the things that people are needing help with is how do I get more people to understand what's going on, to realize the potential? How can I influence and educate more of the people that we're working with, sometimes even our customers as well, or our partners, on what we're trying to achieve? How they're going about doing this and what's the best place to start? The answer is really there are many and various ways of doing it. It depends. The challenge is finding the right place to start from.
You know, when you think about that, or you know, you go into a new place, I mean, for me, coming from kind of an engineering background, I have a bad tendency to just go like, screw your org chart, you know, let's find a band of rebels and we'll come up with how to get this done if there's a mandate. But, you know, when I think about working with kind of execs in big companies, you know, that's a lofty deal here. Like, how do you navigate that? And how do you know, is there kind of a structure or framework that you use to kind of weave your way through that?
Yes, there are. And a lot of it also is about kind of remembering who the people are that are involved and what's motivating them and what knowledge and experiences do they bring that allow you to be able to connect with perhaps what APIs can be doing for them. And the way that we tend, or that I think of it, is across is thinking of the community in a large organization as falling into one of three groups. I refer to them as the sponsors, the technologists, and the transformers. You can think of the sponsors as the people who've got the kind of commercial responsibility for customers, products, partner relationships in today's world. They deeply understand customer needs and priorities. They understand the way business works. And they're inevitably trying to either drive for change to happen faster, either to keep up or overtake competitors or peers. In terms of their involvement with APIs, they may be getting into it out of necessity. So their customers are sometimes in a B2B environment are actually now starting to put pressure on them to move to more integration via APIs. They may see others going faster, peers of competitors of theirs going faster, and they want to be able to do the same. Or they may actually be sort of thinking further ahead and driving true kind of embedded business models out of the opportunities that APIs can deliver as products, for example. This community of elders, I think of them, they're the kind of respected in their communities, custodians of the history, but they've probably been scarred by a lot of IT-enabled change in the past, not delivering to promises. They might be concerned about risk, time, but they will tend to know what good sponsorship looks like as long as they can be persuaded. And part of the education process is sometimes helping them understand that APIs aren't just another way of integrating or something that the CIO, CTO should be looking after, but actually something that they need to really get in and understand. So that's the first group. The second, the technologists, perhaps Jason, the team you'd relate more to, the people with the technical responsibilities, the know-how to support the landscape. I think of them as the navigators. You know, they've got the roadmaps and the knowledge of the underlying system data models, what it takes to modernize. They understand APIs are fundamental to speeding up and simplifying their tech environment, but where they may be wanting to use APIs to, you know, move towards a microservice architecture, reduce the spaghetti, they may be more focused on things like the API platform management systems, which could be taking up and distracting a lot of their time from perhaps also and being able to work out how to have a conversation with their sponsors. Or with the third group that I call the transformers. These are the people in the organization trying out new things. They're the colonizing new territories. Maybe, Jason, this is more your space of comfort.
Yeah, probably.
Wanting to move fast. They might have names like digital innovation, strategic partnerships. They're looking for new places to market the products. That you think of them, I think of them as explorers. They're traveling in little, small, nimble bands. They're carrying very little baggage about how, you know, IT change is done at home base, off exploring new territories. They're partnering with niche tech. They're testing out new tech offerings. They're trying out new ways of doing things. So for some set transformers, APIs can be about improving experiences for existing customers. They might be digitizing customer journeys, looking at APIs as Lego blocks. But for others, that little band of explorers might be going out to marketplaces in new territories. If you're exposing, I don't know, an insurance product as an API for other people to consume in the software they use to market to other consumers, then they're going out to these marketplaces working out what they need to barter with other parties. What's the value of the customer client data, the complex transaction processing that you can get in exchange for access to new distribution channels? So each of these three groups of people all have many different API opportunities for realizing their goals, but depending on where the organization is, and it isn't defined by the industry sector that the company is in, it's actually defined by their API maturity, which helps you understand and then think about who do you need to work with next and who do you need to help.
So when in an organization's life cycle should they recognize that they're ready for an API consultancy to help them explore those opportunities you mentioned?
We will have a good conversation with people when they are at a bit of a block in terms of they're finding that the messages that they want to get across as to why APIs will be successful for their colleagues and their colleagues' customers or their colleagues' partners or suppliers, they come and talk to us because they are struggling to get heard, really. They're finding that it's difficult to get the message across, and they're getting stonewalled perhaps a little bit with there's not enough resources, not of an investment, that's not enough, important enough. Maybe we, you know, there's other stuff that we're doing that's more important in our transformational change. We'll get to that later. Or we think that that's a technology problem. So I'm sure that, you know, that team will be on top of it. It's those sorts of symbols of resistance that organizations or people in organizations are seeing, and where they ask us to help them navigate through. And so they engage us, our time, to help them understand and build a communication plan, build communication content, help them do run training education programs. We help articulate their strategies and their plans in ways that others can better understand.
All right. So Clara, I can't help it. You're right that I probably in my past in these transformations have fallen somewhere between kind of the navigator and explorer in terms of tech and kind of transformation. I certainly have probably a, let's say, flawed perspective here, but I love this frame that you've laid out. And I think it's like sometimes people don't want to talk about power dynamics. And that's really, to me, what you're describing is like, what are kind of the currents or movements that are often not in line, and getting these things moving in the same direction is when amazing things happen. My experience has been that I think that these navigator types, or sorry, the explorer types, right, the transformation focused folks are trying to take things in a positive direction. Sometimes I think I like that you called out like marketplaces, and that there's a little more businessy side to that sort of thing, but it's often in contrast to the sponsor's status quo. And in many examples I've seen, it's we've been operating as a pipeline business for a long time, and it's time to start thinking like a marketplace. And it's like this chasm to cross in thinking. And then the sort of technology-focused navigators, I love this term, are really thinking about this all as this is a way to componentize our platform and make it a more composable business. Why are you all talking about all that other stuff? But where do you think, you know, that the biggest kind of resistance to change comes up in those groups?
It depends, because there are other things in their environment typically that are, in most cases, helping rather than sort of make this broader change towards, as you say, a more, you know, componentized, simpler technology landscape, a more innovative culture, an ability to be able to respond faster and use insights to manage customer changes, all of those sorts of things. I think people often come with investment challenges. So a lot of it manifests as resistance. But I think part of the root cause is that the commercial model for setting up long-running teams is still, for many organizations, still quite project-based, even though it may be not called projects. It might be longer running investment streams around reimagined customer journeys, or I'm not explaining this terribly well.
No, I get it. I get it. It's like there is often a somewhat myopic focus, especially in public companies, on what we do in this year or this next quarter, as opposed to what's the long running theme. And I know for me, what always helps break through a bit is, you know, what is it that we do in simple terms, right? That kind of capabilities view of an organization, and which capabilities are core to our business and need kind of significant sort of reinvest, you know, focused investment. And to your point, I actually totally get these days as older and more experienced that you've been investing in your tech and your business in a certain way for a long time. It's super risky to suddenly make massive shifts. And so it's got to be a series of calculated steps. But those three groups have to be in line with how to make those steps. I'm always interested to see, you know, what does that blueprint end up looking like that is maybe shared artifacts or shared perspective that those different groups can all get on board with.
Couldn't agree more in terms of the evolutionary steps. And that's very much in line with the approach that we encourage people to take as they start trying things out and getting some results with, if you like, the next level of their API maturity whichever of those. So typically the API center of gravity or the center of gravity for us will be in one of those three areas. Sometimes it's on the boundary of a couple of them at the intersection point, but typically we're trying to move the conversation closer to the center of where all three groups can have a common area of interest. But you can't do it across everything in one go. So you might focus, you know, for example, on uplifting some of the platform capability or focus on improving the API consumer onboarding experience while perhaps trying out and experimenting with a different way of doing operating model. Or you might be looking to, with the Explorer community, to go out into some new territories, some new partnerships, but making sure that the technologists are joined at the hip in terms of ensuring that the risk profile from a tech perspective is right and ensuring that the, you know, the minimum standards of how they might support things is in line with expectations. So it's about putting a bit of pressure on people, understanding what they own in that API space. So who owns the standards, who owns how much of what's done is enabling and how much of it is actually executing and how much of it is empowering other people versus putting in just enough of the right touch, like touch governance, that kind of thing. And those activities tend to evolve as people are exploring and then embedding. So they're bringing it back to home base, if you like, from having tried something out in a new space. How are they then bringing that back in and probably along the way changing some of the thinking and then evolving the operating model, because the use of APIs in new problem spaces is actually creating a bit of a different relationship in things like between IT and customer sales, for example, might actually look different. The customer onboarding for large-scale productized APIs might need a different model than way things have been working beforehand.
Man, there's a lot to unpack from that set of comments. So I think I like that you touched on accountability, and you didn't use that word, but I feel like that's what you were describing, is how we think about kind of owning things, or, you know, who drives things, whatever. It changes over the course of kind of reshaping how you both operate the business and the underlying tech. And, you know, I'm a little obsessive after years of working in these transformations about accountability, you know. And I can probably attest to this. I'm constantly, you know, like, what's the outcome? Who's accountable?
What are the leading metrics? What are the trailing metrics?
Yeah, and we're going to go there, but not yet. I think the bit that you didn't mention, and I'm, you know, curious to get your take on how effective this has been in various organizations, is that, you know, for me, it's like, bring it back to the customer. And like, you know, when you can get folks all talking about the customer and what problems we can solve and how we can enable, you know, new kinds of customers or whatever, that breaks through in a way that talking about all the internal kind of politics, sorry, that's what it is a lot of times, that's where I feel like everyone gets stuck. Maybe that's just that I've been lucky in a few organizations that's what worked, but.
I couldn't agree more, Jason, that a really good sort of checkpoint for people always is, what does this mean for the customer? How are we putting the customer at the center of the conversation? And, you know, that can mean, how are we keeping the customer's information safe? How are we ensuring that the customer gets a great experience? How can we, you know, look at their trust, et cetera? The thing that in large organizations that, however, we see that seems to be just takes a while for people to kind of get and for the light to go on, is as they start thinking about the customers, the fact that as they're moving into these, extending the ecosystem and moving into new territories, if you like, that the customer's ecosystem and the customer's problems, as manifested by even the software that the customers are using or that's maintained by them to be able to do other things, is requiring a kind of a two-step of thinking beyond making life better, richer for today's customers. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think these days it's like there's always an ecosystem. You're not providing value in a vacuum, right? Quite often, it's like you're a step in some workflow, and especially in very horizontal platforms, that can be millions of different workflows, and figuring out how to navigate which ones are most important is often overwhelming, and everyone has a different take. totally resonate with that. All right, now we're going to come back to metrics. Damn it, Anna, you knew I was going to go there. My experience has always been that, you know, you said it up front that a lot of the sponsors, you know, kind of the business leaders are often, you know, it's like they've read some Harvard Business Journal somewhere that said, if you do APIs, you'll be faster and more innovative. And learning to accept that this is slow down to go fast in many cases means building an appetite to be patient. And the only way that that's manageable in most cases is, how are we tracking toward our goals, right? How are we progressing in this transformation? You know, I'm just curious, like, is there anything consistent, or is this all just completely unique to each business in your experience?
The way I think of metrics is kind of on a couple of different planes. So, and in fact, I have done some research with CIOs, CTOs, seasoned technology professionals that have been heavily involved in transformation change for a long time and the like. And I've asked them about where they see managing the metrics through their transformational change is more important, between measuring the progress against the core business normal metric, what I'd call the kind of the North Star metric. Sorry, the what metric?
The North Star metric. Oh, yeah. Everyone loves that term.
Yeah. So the traditional parameters of measuring the company's the organization's performance versus a set of new measures that relate to where you will be once you're transformed, if you see what I mean. So what people were saying is that actually they would put, you know, about half their effort into tracking their performance against the big long-running metrics that don't change in the organization, but they would put another kind of equal amount of effort in actually evolving their metrics process. So in other words, they would be working on showing progress against metrics which can become redundant and get replaced and evolved through the change. So without trying to overcomplicate it, it might be that through the API-enabled transformation, you might, in your very early days, just start out counting things like, how many APIs have we got? And people get, you know, are able to talk about, hey, we're making great progress because we've got more of them. It then might be how many APIs that are, you know, aligned with our design standards or that are published on our portal. It then might be more about what's the degree of reuse of our APIs, because the original metrics, how many APIs we've got, when you've got too many and they're proliferating all over the place, is not actually the measure that you want to be able to use to drive the kind of efficiency.
Number of APIs is rarely a measure of success.
Right? Well, that's
unless
right.
It's exactly. Going down in most cases.
That's absolutely right. So the measures mature. And what you need to do is make sure that you don't kind of just keep measuring more and more things, because then you create all these cottage industries of people just reporting stuff, and actually work out what are the measures that are appropriate for that point in time, which might be for the next period of time to move that. If that makes sense.
As a product marketer, the way you describe internal stakeholders is very much like a persona. It resonates as a persona to me. And so the way you're describing how you have to balance sort of that already understood metric of success for that old guard persona, the one bucket, right? That's already been around and matured with the organization, versus that transformation bucket that needs a new set of metrics to measure against. It's interesting to me that each persona requires its own set of metrics to prove success. But I also like that you are suggesting that it makes sense to, as you transform, to move toward the latter bucket, right? To move toward that bucket of transformational metrics and help that old guard see the value in that. What suggestions do you have for helping make that transition for that one group of stalwarts?
I think just to clarify this sponsor community, to call them the elders, as in, which kind of implies that they've been there a long time and that they're potentially hampered by traditional, inverted commas, maybe seen as kind of older ways away. I call them the elders just because they understand the history, the customers of today, and the business environment that their customers are working in. But they represent the commercial, the organization's broader strategy, and they represent the sales, marketing, you know, commercial face of the organization. The transformers are out there trying new stuff, and they're bringing that back in to be then realized and brought to life and brought to scale safely by the others, if that makes sense. So their challenge is more in understanding that APIs can be an integral part of their organization and their offerings, their business-facing offerings to their customers and partners and suppliers and so on, and are really part of their business go-to-market proposition, if you like. And so many people find that that community is really important to bring on board and to find initially, you know, maybe sort of key champions, key people who are going to realize benefit and recognize and bring them into solving problems together, if you like, so that they can then see the potential for APIs enabling more change in for their customers and their particular parts of the business.
This is where, to me, like sometimes it just all comes down to language. And, you know, the struggle I've seen many times is like, you've got these really bright technologists who understand, obviously, the kind of modularization of their platform and making things more maintainable and all that, but quite often might have an idea of how the business could transform, but lack the communication tools to explain it to the folks that kind of hold the purse strings. And I feel like things get to a head all the time where you've got all this opportunity. And to your point, and I love how respectful of each of these groups you are, and that it's like nobody's a bad guy, right? And that's always important to remember, is that there's risk in making big change and breaking down that change into a set of evolutionary steps. I love that term too. That's the real challenge here. And it's like, do you see that these kind of explorer types serve as a communication intermediary, or is it someone else that takes kind of the way that technologists talk versus the way that, you know, you're typically MBA trained exec types talk, where they're often saying the same thing and just don't realize it?
I could not agree more with you on terminology, Jason. It's a very, very, an item very close to my heart. And almost, you know, any change that I've been involved in has invariably started with some really simple kind of, okay, these are the terms that we're going to be using in this context. And what are they meaning in this sense? Because one of the unfortunate things about our industry is we end up having to use the same words for different things, or our use of the same words differently or differently in the wrong context can just create massive confusion. And I think that a very common criticism of, for example, technologists and or even some, you know, any of those actually three groups that I talked about, is that they will talk in language that means something to other people in their part of the tribe, but is actually can be really variously interpreted by others or misunderstood. So I think that the transformers have a fantastic role in helping the sponsors understand the potential for doing really new different things. So they can come back from these new territories, these marketplaces, and say, hey, look, this is what's going on more broadly in the industry. These are what other people are doing. Look, we've been talking to this, you know, exciting tech partner who can offer some, you know, really fast ways of us getting into new markets. And they can, so I think they can work really well in that. I think the technologist community can help by also making that real in terms of actually what's going on in underlying systems today, how they and how it fits with that broader simplification agenda that you were talking about, and help sequence things like in what order should we be working on this stuff. So, you know, it is really important to find a common language, and actually writing a lot more stuff down and writing things in really simple things and recommunicating the same messages, even while some of the metrics you might be using to move to show progress might evolve. In many ways, you want to anchor to a number of key themes that are really consistent, and that language can be centered around the customer. It can be centered around, it can be, you know, can link to values. It can be linked to, you know, the broader cultural change that the people are trying to make. That connection can make it more real.
Yeah, man, I could pay you consulting to just sit around and talk about this topic for days. I love this stuff. Shifting gears a little bit, though, you know, we said at the beginning that there's always culture change. And I feel like there's a few signposts, you know, a few things that just always seem to emerge. you know, one of which is InnerSource. I think it's like, if you don't know how to share code internally, there's no way you can, you know, kind of shift how you operate the business and shift your kind of into more modular ways of building. But I also feel like another really important one is you find out in the process of kind of picking apart an organization and changing the way it works like this, areas where you have these bubbles of thought, and that being intentional about creating more diversity of viewpoints throughout that is just one of these key indicators that you're doing it right. That, you know, for my taste, that's like a feel that I look for, right? Is, do you still have these pockets of one viewpoint? And that could be global in the sense that, you know, you've got one country operating one line of business. That could be, you know, there's a boys club somewhere. You know, there's a lot of different versions of this, but obviously a topic you're very knowledgeable on with your involvement in women APIs. And I'd love to see, you know, hear your take on where that's played a significant role in these transformations.
Absolutely. The importance of different perspectives coming from different people in different parts of the organizations is so critical for getting change happening. If you want to do something differently, you've got to get some different people. And I think that, you know, when you start out solving some of these problems, and we still find it with a lot of the kind of client activities that we're involved in, you know, the meeting will start and there'll be people who haven't actually met each other before. I know that in the last 2 years, people haven't met each other physically, but this, in this case, people haven't even met each other virtually.
I'll tell you, like, personally, it's been weird over the years how often I got good at dealing with the awkwardness of people that don't know each other that should. It's bizarre how often it happens. So I'm chipping in on that one.
Yeah. In one of my one of my women in tech initiatives that I was involved in the past, with high school students and doing some workshopping with a principal at a girls' school. And I remember when we did some reciprocal time with each other, and when they came and visited our office, and we, you know, I kicked off this workshop and all the people around the room went, this is my name and this is the team that I come from. The teacher was just blown away by the fact that we could, you know, leap into an hour and a half's conversation to solve a bunch of complex problems with a group of people that we had never met before, or at least not everybody knew everybody else. And, you know, when you work in change, you're always doing that. And the more diverse that group is, the more likely you are to come up with a more interesting outcome and solution and start getting people to think differently. If all the people in that room look and sound the same and they're all the same age and they all come from the same place and they've all had a similar background, let alone, you know, gender balance, cultural mix, all the other things, they're unlikely to be able to really come up with the sorts of solutions that today's organizations need in order to cope with the world that we live in.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, when, you know, I might talk to someone that's in a fairly early stage startup and they're thinking, you know, hey, we're doing pretty well, say in the market that we started in, but it's time to go global. And it's like, my warning is always like, who do you have that doesn't live in the country that you started in? Right? Like, I mean, there's some real simple fundamental things that, like, you move into a new market and, you know, we're all little tribes, right? Around the world, we're all weird little pockets of humanity that have come up with ways to coexist. And it's always different. And if you don't have that perspective, you don't have a chance in a global market. You're going to make missteps constantly. But, you know, beyond that, I think there's also an evolving set of perspectives on, you know, on kind of how to take diversity, how to work with women, all these things that within your own organization and the larger places is something that I think you have to be tuned into on where along this course of transformation you can progress those things into, you know, kind of a more diverse way of thinking. So anyways, it seems like part of the strategy building in some ways to me that sometimes is not as intentional as it could be.
There are so many ways to be able to role model the right kinds of inclusive practices, you know, in any interaction. So those they happen, you know, in people's every working day. I think there's an opportunity to be intentional about that stuff and not be in the kinds of conversations sound like some of the ones that you've had. I've certainly had people talking about, well, you know, we've got 20, 30, 40, 50 people in our organization and we're a tech company. And so our gender balance is not where it should be. And now we need to get more women. And it's sort of like, okay,
yeah.
Have you actually thought about what is it that is making your environment perhaps not? And then there's the whole, we find it really hard to appeal. You know, how can we get more people in? We don't know enough people apply. And it's like, well, why are you only thinking about that now? And yeah. Look from the outside and talk to some people about how perhaps you're presenting yourselves as to whether you're the sorts of place that is going to be where people are going to really want to come and work with you.
Yeah. Well, as I said before, Claire, this is definitely one of those conversations where I feel like, you know, we could go on forever, but, you know, knowing that everybody has too many podcasts, we probably need to find a stopping point here. So as you reflect on all this, any kind of closing thoughts or, you know, I got to ask it. And if you've listened to the podcast at all, you know, what's coming is like for those companies that haven't started on this journey yet, when you look across all those different experiences and organizations, like, where's the right place to start in general? And I know you're going to say depends, but I'm going to pressure you to, you know, well, like, even if the answer is figure out depends, like, where do you start?
I have to say, I haven't come across organizations that are starting out. Everybody that we talk to is on the way somewhere. Their challenge more is like, how do we get better value from what we've got so far? How do we accelerate what we've started? How do we get more people on board more quickly? So I'm not going to answer it depends. I'm going to say I don't hear about people who are early on the journey.
Yeah, often. I guess I should have thought about that before, that question doesn't work when I'm dealing with consultants who are brought in when people get stuck. It totally makes sense now. So, okay, fair enough.
The first time you stumped him in this podcast. Yeah. Way to go, Claire.
Nice job. I guess then ignore my question. Any other interesting closing thoughts or kind of words of wisdom for listeners who are thinking about these things?
I think it comes back to don't underestimate the value you'll get from really deeply understanding who your stakeholders are and how to get them on board and helping you along. It will make your life easier and you will get your results quicker. If you want to find out more about what we do, and a couple of things coming up. I'm speaking at API Days Helsinki in the middle of March, which is we're going to be talking about getting traction with stakeholders behind APIs as products. People are welcome to connect with me on LinkedIn. They can find out more about us at apisfirst.com or theapicollective.com. And if you want to join the Women in APIs community, we have 250 other members and growing in the community across more than 40 countries, and they work for more than 220 different organizations. So if you'd like to be part of that community, helping people be seen and heard, you can find out more at apidays.global and join up.
Highly recommend. I'm in the Women in APIs group, and it's a really great group of people.
Stoplight has been a fantastic partner and sponsor for us over the last couple of years, which has just been amazing.
We have been happy and proud to help tell that story for sure. Well, Claire, I want to thank you for your openness and kind of sharing on kind of your methodology and some of the lessons that you've learned in these things. And, you know, really hope that listeners have some great takeaways from this. And frankly, you gave us a great structure that's going to make kind of the written version of this real easy too. So I think it's going to make for some great reading as well. But thanks very much for taking time to join us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Anna. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening. If you have a question you want to ask, look in the description of whichever platform you're viewing or listening on, and there should be a link there so you can go submit a question, and we'll do our best to find out the right answer for you.